Hello and welcome to episode 30 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown, and I have got a very, very, very special guest, Lucas Davidson, on.
Hello.
Lucas hails from the East Coast. He is currently located in Delaware, though he calls Dallas former home. Home? What would you say? Where do you tell people you're from?
Dallas. Lucas? Definitely okay. From Dallas.
So he's from Dallas. Like, much like me, I have not lived in Hoytsville for a decade, but if anyone asks, I'm from Hoytsville. So I totally get that. Lucas has been shredding it up this season, this regional season. He's going to tell us about three regionals that he's won, which I know sounds insane, but this is going to be a really, really awesome episode. But first off, just a few quick housekeeping items. Send an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com to join us on the Slack channel. We would love to get as many people on as we can. If you're not on the Slack channel and you don't want to join for whatever reason, but you want to send feedback, please email us. Send an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com. I love all the feedback I get. If there's things you'd like us to talk about, changes you'd like us to make, anything, I'll take it. Harsh as you want. The other thing is, another reason to join the Slack channel is because we're starting to coordinate for Worlds. So we're going to try and do something like dinner, hang out, you know, have fun when we're all there. And we've got a channel dedicated to it in the Slack channel. So if you want to get on to talk to us about that, we would love to have you. In addition, support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Zion's Finest so you can get all of our sweet swag. That is all the housekeeping we're going to do. Let's turn it over to Lucas and let him introduce himself.
Great. Thank you for the intro, Kenny. I'm Lucas Davidson. I've been playing Imperial Assault since a little after release. It got pitched to me one time as kind of like a traditional miniatures game or similar that you could play in 45 minutes. And after I'd been slogging through 2 and 3 hour rounds of Warma Hordes for tournament play, this sounded fantastic. And I've never really looked back since.
That's awesome. So you did have some previous miniatures experience before you got into IA.
Yeah, I've been a sucker for tabletop games since I was probably 10 or 11.
Okay.
And it's just been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
In a lot of different areas of the hobby.
Awesome.
So, my first Imperial Assault tournament was, I'd been playing for about a month, and it was the 2015 regional, and this was before any of the first fact, pass rule wasn't a thing, there was a 9 activation Imperialist that was king, and I showed up to that regional with some Stormtroopers and some Royal Guard, and Forrest Gumped my way into winning it. And got kind of hooked ever since.
That's so cool. Man, alive. Those were the days. I mean, man, what a completely different game it was back then. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's changed so much. And mostly for the better. Like, consistently.
Yeah. What are some things that you wish were some things that have changed for the worse? Anything you'd go back to? Besides unnerfing Rebel Sabs? I know that's the first thing at the top of your list.
That is. I actually think all the changes at a micro level were pretty solid. There were definitely some I was salty about at the time. I played reinforcement-based troopers for like 2.5 years. So when the scoring change rolled around, I was the saltiest kid in the playground.
of course.
And then after about 3 weeks of playing with this new paradigm, I'm like, oh, scoring happens, right? You're not doing all this kind of sometimes neat tactical play of running the last guy away and hiding in a corner, but that doesn't really seem terribly thematic, and sending little kill teams to go try and find that last guy was a pain for everybody involved, so that was definitely a good change. Like, I think the changes they've made in a vacuum have been good. As the power level with the game has grown, as you said earlier, I wish they'd peel back some of those old changes, although I think the officer still needs to be the way it is post-nerf.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is one I do not want to go back to. I mean, like Vader. Holy smokes, give that guy 2 more movement. Good night. Cool. So what are your favorite factions, units? Like, what do you like to play?
I don't have a lot of allegiance. In Worlds last year, I was playing Mercenaries because everybody was playing Mercenaries. And I was playing, but it was one of my favorite units to play was the Elite Gamorrean Guards. Is I played 2 units of the Pigs. I loved them. I thought they were, you know, they're hit point efficient. They have a defensive shtick. They have an offensive shtick. So I really liked them. And then when Nationals rolled around, I was playing a double Rangers list that got me to top 8. And then this regional season and most previous regional seasons, I've been playing Imperials. I bounce around to whatever strikes my fancy.
That's cool. You mentioned Nationals and Worlds. Do you want to give us a little bit of your, prior to this regional season, a little bit of your organized play experience?
Yeah, so we're going to start with the most impressive thing by far, which is regionals. Regionals are my favorite part of the organized play season, year, I'm not certain what you call it. Going to someone else's store, seeing how they, like, seeing their local crowd, seeing how they play the game, just exploring the new store itself is something that I've always found really neat. And I also enjoy the size of the tournament. Like, 16 to 32 person tournaments are a great size for like board game and wargaming tournaments. You can run them comfortably in one day. So the Imperial Assault regional season is really my favorite part of the whole shebang. Counting this year, I think I have 8 regional trophies now.
Holy smokes! Won the first year.
Two in 2016, 2 in 2017, and then 3 this season. So that is by far the most impressive thing I've done, is just show up to people's store and take their regional trophies.
There you go. That's awesome. I mean, that's a very impressive statistic.
As far as Worlds, I've been twice. I went to the very first one, and then I went to the most recent one, and I had a little bit of a gap. DT's first year, I missed.
Okay.
And the first one, I showed up with Stormtroopers to a 4x4 fight. So I went 4-3, I think I had a weak SOS, very middle of the pack. Still, it was a blast. It was the first time I saw the game center and sort of got involved with the larger FFG community. And then I went back most recently. I went 5-2. I missed the cut on SOS, which sounds more impressive than it was. Like, I missed the cut, and I think I was 24th. Right, so there were a ton of 5-2s around.
Yeah,
I wasn't particularly close. I dropped games in Swiss to Dan Taylor and to Matt Mateau.
You had told me about Matt. He is in your practice group and a very, very, very good player.
Yes. He's an excellent player. He was the only Rebel player in the most recent regional or the most recent Worlds to make the top 16, and the only non-scum player. So.
Holy smokes.
We will have some, our little testing group will have some Matt Mateau flavored t-shirts in order to recognize that accomplishment that you'll see around, you'll see us wearing at this world, so keep an eye out for that.
Awesome.
Commemorating our hero of the rebellion.
We love it. We will look forward to it. That is awesome. Well, you have obviously won several regional trophies. Let's talk about this season, because for those of us who have kind of come online in terms of competitive skirmish, this season has been a very wide open meta in a lot of ways. It does seem like Empire has been doing really, really well, at least in the United States.
And I think that's an important caveat of the, at least yes. in the US.
Yes, indeed.
This has been the best meta since the game has existed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like by a mile. All three factions are playable. While I tend to agree with you, Kenny, that I feel like the Empire has a slight edge right now, the difference between like first to worst is tiny.
Yep, I totally agree. I completely agree. And so, so with that being the case, the reason why I wanted Lucas to come on is because he has done so incredibly well this regional season with Empire. And I think that is in the face of people have increasingly teched against Empire. I know I have. Even when I was running the box, like my 9 activation box, that wasn't going to do very good against Empire, I still teched what I was doing in that list against the Empire, right? So, and I think that's happened with a lot of people, and yet you've still done really well. So what I'd like to do is have Lucas go over his list and then talk about how it has fared in all of his regional tournaments.
Great. So the core of the list is actually 2 units of Jet Troopers.
Yep.
You're going to see Vader in it, but Vader's not Vader's window dressing. And we'll get to that more in a second. The core of it is the Jet Troopers, an officer, and Zillow. And then whatever you kind of want to do with the extra points really shapes what flavor of Imperialist you play. In the first regional I went to, which was the Glen Burnie, the Maryland regional, I ended up losing to Brett in the finals. Yep. I settled on 2 jets, Vader, Palpatine, a couple officers, Zillow. Fairly straightforward, used a lot of the new hotness. And the reason I actually settled on this is not a terribly glorious one. I was really hungover that morning and wanted something easy to play. And with this, it's like pretty much I'm going to push dudes forward and roll dice and see if I can do something tactically neat with the Emperor. And that's sort of how this season started. Off to a blast.
Not optimized for winning, although you did make it to the final, but still.
I don't think anyone was really prepared. Like, Ira was running that same list. Uh-huh. And I don't think anyone was really prepared for, like, exactly what kind of questions that the combination of the Jets and Vader was going to ask.
Absolutely.
And that, I ended up getting second to Brett. He's talked about some of those games at length. The short story is, while I had sort of thought, well, I'd figured out what I thought was good, he was a step ahead and had figured out what to do about what people thought was good. So look on his blog. I'm certain he's talked about it here before, I think, as well, for a recap of those games. The game from that I want to mention was actually another one of your guests. Is I played Paul Heaver there, and I really liked his list, which had Vader and two units of E-Sentries. So the core of this thing, now that we've decided that we're going to use Vader in it, is I'm going to have efficient units backed up by a hard question to answer. In that way, the two Jets and what will eventually become the Riot and Vader is not terribly different than two units of Elite Sentries and Vader.
That's a great point.
What the trade that gets made there is the Elite Sentries, when you can get them firing twice, are some of the most efficient damage dealers in the game.
Absolutely.
What you trade there is efficiency in health and efficiency in movement. So if you are absolutely focused on this kind of like very efficient damage output and having a hard question, I really like Paul's list.
Yeah.
I think the version that has the two Jets and, as we'll get to, the one set of E-Riots, is a little bit more versatile.
Yeah,
but that was a super interesting game, and that boiled down to is I had to kill four E-Sentries and score 20 points talking to dudes.
because this was an Anchorhead.
Yeah, this was an Anchorhead. This was Patriots. Anchorhead,
so yep.
So that's kind of like two very similar ideologies, right? You're looking for efficiency, and then this kind of strange piece invader who's points denial, he's board control, he's a really big stick if he gets up in your grill. And his take on it was super interesting. I have not given it the playtesting it deserves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because now the Anchorhead is out and Mos Eisley is in. I mean, the lines of sight aren't as good on Mos Eisley as they are on, like, Nalhutta, but there's still some pretty long lines in that. And, you know, something that E-Sentries could really thrive on. I don't know. That's a really good point.
Yep, I agree. I still think that's a very potent build, especially if your strategy, if your strategy with your list is the main way I'm going to get points, I'm going to get 30 to 36 points a match just by shooting dudes. I think that's a great place to start. I really liked his list, and it turned into a really interesting game. So, the long story short on the Glen Burnie Regional is I end up getting second to Brett. I lose one round in Swiss to Brett. And then in the semis, I play James. And this was kind of this was an interesting match. He's playing, for a while, he was playing an Imperial list that used two Jets, some officers, the Emperor, Taro, and Triple Zero.
Interesting.
And Triple Zero was how he dealt with things like Han or Vader. And I had just listened to, in round four, Ira playing James and exclaiming rather loudly how surprised he was that Triple Zero was anything more than window dressing. And James gave me a window where I could get Vader caddy corner to Triple Zero on like the bottom of turn one and hit him with a stick just to solve that problem. And I took it. And, like, he was my target priority number one, which is kind of strange to think about, but it really removed his best answer for Vader at the time.
That's interesting. Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna have to think about that.
And then Brett bamboozled me again in the finals.
Of course.
Vader was on stun lock the whole time.
Ugh. Meh. Jin.
Yep, yep. So then we get to the... fast forward a little bit, we get to Connecticut, which was the first regional I'd won. I played a lot of my... We drove up there, and I played a lot of local guys. Or, by local guys, I mean I played a lot of the guys I drove up there with. Which is a shame, because I've been up to their store for a couple years in a row now, and I really like some of their local players. I used my buy, so I played one less game, and then I just hit all the people that are sort of local to the Philly area.
Yeah.
I end up dropping one in Swiss. The round four match, I end up dropping to James after we do a little drawing back and forth on if we're going to play it, and he beats me. He loses in the semis to a Jersey player named Nick Bodner, who is a Rebel player and had just unveiled his Han Chewy kind of play style, which was, and I think that hurt James a little bit because we'd never practiced against Chewy. It took him a little bit by surprise. And then I beat Nick in a close game in the finals.
Was he at your most recent tournament?
Yep. Yeah, okay, he made top four at the most recent one.
Okay, good. So he's obviously very good. And it was with that same list, wasn't it?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, okay.
And that was the Connecticut regional was actually the first regional. I made a large change in removing the Emperor and getting the E-Riots in. Sort of the logic behind that is I think the Emperor is actually, I think he's really, really good. I actually think in the lifespan of the game, he may have a longer like relevancy period than the fixed Vader, just because of how incredibly versatile he is.
Yep,
but absolutely. I don't think he and Vader work terribly well together, right? Vader needs bodies around him to make up for his kind of limited movement and range of threat. And the Emperor needs guns around him, generally at as good a guns as you can get, to maximize his Emperor ability.
Absolutely.
And so those two don't synergize terribly well. I think it's a coin flip on which you want to build around. The coin came up Vader, so I tried to build around him. The biggest, sort of toughest bodies that we have, since I can't take a third unit of Elite Jets, was the Elite Riots.
Yep.
They're hit point efficient like the Jets. They have a defensive shenanigan in getting the block token. They have an offensive shenanigan in getting the reroll and applying stun baton for the extra strain. And they kind of have a control shenanigan with applying weaken, which turns out to be super helpful in dealing with some of the Rebel matchups, especially those who have cunning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even if you're only doing like two, like a damage and a strain, getting the auto weaken on Han or on Jin is super, super helpful. It helps you crack the box open.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it really is like the best thing in the world against these Rebel box, like box-ish Han Jin lists, realistically. I mean, it's just so good against them.
Yep. So that was when I kind of got the deployment card set. At this point, the command deck was still a work in progress. I was focusing a little bit more than was optimal on sort of generally useful things.
Okay.
Even very good cards that ended up kind of making their way out of my list later, like Tough Luck and Blitz. I was spending points on things that are useful for everybody, but may not be the most useful for me in this situation.
Okay.
So then we get to the third regional, which was Dallas, Super Bowl Sunday. It's great to be back in Dallas, hanging out with some old friends. Three of us went down to the regional at Common Ground Games. Great store if you're in the area. Go give them a visit. At that point, I had my command deck kind of nailed down. We'd had a little bit more playtesting time, and I'd moved away from some of the generic cards. The two biggest by far additions were Force Surge and Dark Energy. Right,
great cards.
I'm on the fence on Force Surge. I think that one is going out for 2 points. But Dark Energy was like I read it. I thought about it for a while. I didn't believe it. I read it again. And it has just been, it's the best one-point card in my deck. It may be the best one-point card for Imperials outside of, like, Intelligence Leak if you're running Spies.
Yeah, sure. Like, Negation, right? Like
yeah.
These other, like, super staple cards.
I don't know. I might, depending on the board state, there are a lot of times I'd rather have another Dark Energy in my hand than Negation.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But man, it's so good. So good. Anyway, and that regional actually felt really, really, really good. We had a bunch of good players there, too. A bunch of guys traveled. There was Felipe, who made top 16 at Worlds this last year. Ryan Janway, you know, top four at Nationals, friend of the pod, was there. It was a really good turnout. It was like 17 or 18 people. I was really happy to see it. So I go 3-0 for the first three rounds of Swiss, and then I concede the fourth to go get food.
Wise.
Yeah, I was hungry.
And also, you're from Dallas. So, I mean, it's kind of like your home. You can go get food at a place you love.
Yeah, well, and really, this was finding like the one regional fast food chain that doesn't exist up here, which is Whataburger. And there you go. Man, I miss Whataburger. So I went and found a Whataburger and then wandered back because there was one just sort of like around the block.
Cool.
There was a list there that I played in Swiss, and then in the top four, it's one of those lists that I looked at, and I'm like, in the bag, got it, no problem, on to the next one. And it was down to the wire both times. And the opponent there ran, I'm sorry, I forgot the guy's name, but he was running Palp, Vader, ATDP, Elite Officer, Regular Officer, Regular Officer, Zillow, I think.
Yes.
Some combination of that to make the points work out.
And I heard about this list.
And he did well. Like, he pushed it. He, like, and got extra movement with Vader. He used the ATDP really well in setting up neat line of sight angles to where he could get the assault off. And the only weakness to that list, really, is it has a hell of a time competing on scenario.
Yeah. Getting objectives is really, really tough.
So that one, those were two close games, both in Swiss and then in the top four. I end up playing my buddy John in the finals. John Rupp, I used to work with him.
He's on our Slack channel.
Yeah, nice.
Very good player.
Very good player. Also the absolute most fun person to watch a sporting event. I'm going to go ahead and say in the history of humanity. Like,
wow.
Bar none.
I love these strong declaratives. That, and that is a strong declarative.
If you get a chance to watch a sporting event with John, with a team that he cares about, could be, you know, he's born and grew up around PA, so he was, and the Eagles were playing in the Super Bowl the next day, so he was,
of course,
like he was ginned up and ready for that, and but it could have been like little league soccer that he had a cousin on. Doesn't matter. If you get a chance to watch a sporting event with John on any team he cares about, do so. It's 2 hours of comedy gold.
That's awesome.
He beat Ryan twice. He beat Ryan in Swiss and then beat him in the top four match. Like, I was like rooting for him. No offense to Ryan, but it's nice.
Of course. He loves Ryan. You love Ryan. We all love Ryan, but, you know, I mean, this is your best friend, so.
Yeah, it's nice to see a buddy take it home. And then we played in the finals. And it was, I could spread out a little bit more. It was one of the Nalhutta missions. I don't remember which. And I ended up getting it probably high 20s to 40, mostly on scenario points. But that one, that was the first regional where I really felt like I have it nailed down. I have the right balance between the command deck, the deployments were all working as intended. Life felt good. So then we go to North Carolina a few months later. I've changed nothing. And at North Carolina, there are a bunch of people doing really cool things with Vader and Unshakeable.
Yes.
And this had just never occurred to me. Like, Cody Doherty, Ryan, I feel like there was one more person who was, like, doing all sorts of neat things with Vader and Unshakeable. While I ended up, I think they had tactically caught on, they certainly had tactically caught on to something that I hadn't caught on to yet. But a lot of them had kind of very skewed lists. Like, Cody's was five activations and almost entirely melee. That's going to be hard to work on, like, three of the scenarios with, right?
Yep, exactly.
Ryan made it to top four in our top four game, which was very close. And I was able to spread him out a little bit. Get a few more points on the objectives than he was able to, and keep the fight in the middle competitive. Like, not let him win it decisively. Yeah. And that
was on Nalhutta, right?
Yeah, that was one of the Nalhutta. I think that was shielded.
Yeah, and see, I mean, like, that's such a good example, because he was running an all-melee list, and against jet troopers with a ranged shot of some kind on Nalhutta, they're so mobile, right? Yep. Like, that is just built for them.
Yeah, they're getting six movement points around. There's a lot of places to hop out, shoot, hop back in, yep. And to kind of do a little kiting for some of those more melee-centric guides. Vader solves a lot of the kiting problem by being able to force choke someone across the map, but
yeah.
If you can duck around a corner, you know, he can't choke everybody.
Yeah, it's true.
More's the pity.
of course.
So what I took from that, and I played James in the final. And James had actually beaten me earlier that day in Swiss, and we'd been talking recently about what do you do about the mirror match. Strategically, what we had come up with for the mirror match and like Vader Jets versus Vader Jets is it's the person that applies his Vader to the other person's Jets plus, the best. That's what's going to win it. And we played this match in Swiss, and he applied his Vader significantly better than I applied mine. Like, mine got tied up in the, it was on Jabba's. It's the pick up a box for 2 points on Jabba's.
Yeah, spoils of ownership. Or spoils of crime.
Spoils of crime, exactly. And in Swiss, like, I got tied up in the center room with all the walls with some riot troopers for most of the game. And he was up in the top room just murdering my jet troopers left, right, and center. So I dropped that one. In the finals, we're actually playing the exact same mission. I knew I had to change something. I actually didn't think I could outposition him. I've learned more about both sort of oblique attack angles and good defensive positioning by playing against James and watching him beat me than I think anywhere else in IA. So I actually didn't think I could execute the strategy that we had sort of come up with better than he could. But in my hand, I had all the unmitigatable damage in the world, right? We were playing almost the exact same list. He was playing Unshakable, but hadn't really doubled down on the command cards, and I was playing Rule by Fear.
Yep.
So I had a small command card advantage. And I had Grenadier. I had Overrun. I had Dark Energy. I may have had Force Surge, I might not have, but I had all this damage that he couldn't do anything about. And he... So I sort of lead with my jets into the middle room. He drops his Vader down there, attending to, you know, I think mostly second verse, same as the first. And I spend a unit of jets. I throw a grenade, which rolls a 3. I overrun, which bops him for another 2. I spend an end of the round action or an end of the round thing with Vader, with my Vader choking him. So it's 7 unmitigated points of damage. I start the next round with either dark energy or face to face to get him to me. I spend, I think it was dark energy. So he has like now 8 unmitigated points of damage. I choke him. He has 10 unmitigated points of damage. At this point, his Vader's taking 10 damage. My Vader's taking none. And I haven't rolled an attack against him.
So big. Man, this is so big.
And then I hit him with a stick. And I roll pretty much fire. And he rolls well defensively, but there's not 8 and 2 surges that I was looking at. Like, you can't Zillow out of that. And his Vader dies.
This is huge. That is so huge.
Yeah. And now he has a couple of lanes, because I've left myself a little out of position to get this off, right? But he has a couple of lanes to my softer targets, to my jets, and I think to a jet that's holding a box, and to kind of an injured jet that's off to the side. And he rolls around with 2 jet troopers, and they just don't show up. They roll almost nothing. I'm able to brace for impact, 1 attack away, and the other one might do a couple damage. And at this point, like, it's really hard to right the ship for him momentum-wise.
Absolutely.
Especially when the dice didn't help him out on that strafing run to try and remove some soft stuff. Like, I think he had a really reasonable shot at removing, like, 2 jets and a riot trooper. And after 2 activations, he had removed a riot trooper.
Yeah, it's just not enough.
And then after that round, he called it, and we shook hands, and then we all got in the car and drove 7 hours and got to talk about it.
Yeah, I wanna like bring this up, so we're talking about James Hedgepath, who is an incredibly good player. We've talked about him with Brett, right? And this is a good teaching moment for those of us who'd be like looking at this game and we'd say, okay, Lucas just walloped and got rid of James's Vader, right? And now he's got a perfectly healthy Vader. You think the game's over. But at this point, James still has a chance to turn it by using his, right? He needs to, at this point, get an equal amount of material, which is why you said, you know, you got two jets and a riot. That's 12 points. And if he can remove that, he's still in the game, yeah, right? Even though, like, Vader has, his Vader's gone. Your Vader at this point, like, he can run away from him and remove other things, right?
Yep.
But being unable to do that, he is now at a strong material disadvantage, and he's just not going to be able to pull it back.
Yep. And kind of a tempo disadvantage at that point.
Yes.
Because, absolutely, right, I've set the line of battle and sort of accomplished the thing that I wanted to do, and his counter fell shorter than optimal.
Yep. Absolutely.
So it kind of lets me set the pace for the rest of it. We didn't actually end up playing out the rest of it, but yeah, and it's a.
But we the reason why is just because we see the writing on the wall.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Good. That's awesome. That's such an incredible thing to, like, observe, you know, even through narrative, in terms of just seeing how that could work, where James might be able to pull it back, but at this point you say, okay, you know, we're kind of done. That's awesome.
And especially with him, and especially in protracted play, there aren't too many people that I'm terribly concerned of that will consistently play tactically better than I will.
Yeah.
He's one of them. Right?
Yeah.
And if we go through all five regionals, I lost four games. Two to Brett Kelly and two to James Hedgepath.
that is quite the bench right there.
I conceded one to Philippe, which I think would have been a heck of a game because he's a very good player. But for all the ones that we just sat down and played, James and I went 2-2 on the season, and Brett swept me. We played two games, and he beat me twice.
So we'll come back to that. But
yep. So fast forward to the Connecticut regional, or not to the Connecticut, to the New Jersey regional, the last one of the thing, the grand finale. And over the car ride back on the previous week, we'd spent all this time talking about how what we really took away from North Carolina was all the neat things you could do with Unshakeable, and how it was just such, like, a strict first order optimal upgrade over Rule by Fear. It let you get an extra attack. It removed a major vulnerability of the Vader list, and it played nicely with things that you already had in the command deck. And we get to New Jersey, and like 3 minutes before the tournament starts, I decide, yeah, no, I'm just going to play Rule by Fear and the old command deck. I'm not going to do all this neat stuff that we talked about for so long and I've been thinking about all week. I'm going to go back to something that's familiar. And this was a huge mistake. Not like in the normal sort of last-minute list changes to something you're unfamiliar with, because I knew, like, I'd piloted this list to three regional wins. Hopefully I knew what I was doing by this point in time.
Absolutely.
Or at least
it's clear. It's clearly solid, and you clearly have what's the word? You've clearly got the lines where you need the lines to be.
Yeah. So I resist innovation. First round matchup, James Hedgepath. All right, here we go. He has made these changes. We're playing on Nalhutta. We're playing Shielded. I get the better deployment zone for the Jets, which is the top small one, because you are closer to the objective that's over the dotted line, and you can score points more easily.
Absolutely.
On this scenario. Fantastic. I proceed to execute that. He can't mimic it. No. So I'm going to be up 4-8 points at the end of round one. To win the game, the path forward for him is to win the fight in the middle decisively. And tricks with Unshakable and Dark Energy and looking for a fight and Parting Blow and all this wonderfully cool, like, tactically powerful things that we'd been talking about over the past week, let him do exactly that. He is able to get my Vader down an activation before I could have finished his. And after this all shakes out, it parlays into he's up on material, a riot and a jet. And has closed the points gap at the end of round two. And I am way out of position. We may play a little round three, but not much because the writing was on the wall. I shake his hand. He innovated where I remain stagnant, and, like, he rubbed my nose in it immediately.
Fine. Like a good friend. Yeah. I would you mind just giving us, when you say the dark energy, parting blow, looking for a fight? Like, tell us, like, in terms of, like, what is... We've been over this before, but some people might not be aware in terms of what we're talking about when we're talking about this parting blow, rule... not rule by fear. The parting blow, looking for a fight stuff. Like, what are we talking about? Like, what are the things that he's able to do?
Okay, sure. Because these are super neat tactically and kind of rough to have happen to you if you're not prepared for them.
Very much. Very, very much.
So let's start with parting blow, because this is the mechanism that generates extra attacks. A hostile figure, I don't have it up in front of me, but the gist of it is when a hostile figure leaves a space adjacent to one of your brawlers, you get to interrupt that movement to make an attack.
Before they leave,
and you become stunned. There are a couple of weird limitations, right? If the square that they're leaving already has a figure in it, you can't stop them there.
Okay.
Like, that's there are a couple of really weird parts to that card, but they come up like 1% of the time. So that's the core of it. And the other powerful part of that is it's a 2-point card, but you get to take two of them, right? So you can do this fairly consistently. You can count on seeing, like in a game, you can count on seeing a parting blow. So you can count on getting one extra attack with Vader. Or like super plan B, a riot. The next component of this is unshakable, right? The last part of parting blow is you become stunned. This is pretty much the worst thing that you can do to Vader voluntarily. Unshakable, you exhaust it during, I think, at the start of any one of your unit's activations, any one of your deployments.
Does not need to be Vader.
Does not need to be Vader. Can be anybody else. You remove a harmful condition, so also useful for removing weaken, from the figure. Or bleed, I guess, if Vader's bleeding somehow.
Unlikely, but possible.
Yeah, Greedo Surge? I'm not certain. Could be bleeding. Yeah. You can remove this harmful condition, and the figure takes a strain, which is almost certainly a card off the top, because hit points on Vader are super valuable. He has two black dice and a reroll to protect him.
And you're not getting through your 15 cards, especially if you don't have Roll by Fear.
Yep. Exactly that. So you're turning that sort of like dead card and... making air quotes, you can't see it, but that dead card into something useful. And so that mitigates the downside. Okay, well, traditionally, the downside to parting blow is it is dependent on your opponent doing something. So a KG opponent can play around it. Well, that's where things like looking for a fight and dark energy come in. Looking for a fight gives you a attack token, a damage token, that's what I'm looking for, and it lets you either move one space or push a figure one space. So if you're already next to what you want to hit, you push it one space into another one adjacent to you, and you use parting blow on the push.
So awesome.
The same thing with dark energy. You target a figure within three spaces of Imperial Force user. You do one damage to it, and you push it a space, which also lets you trigger parting blow reliably. These things are really, dark energy is so good. We talked about that a little bit earlier. It's unmitigated damage. It's getting someone closer to you, or it's moving them for this parting blow shenanigan, and you are maximizing your Vader attacks, which are the best attacks in the game.
Absolutely.
So red, yellow, plus one with a reroll and two damage and three pierces surge options.
And dark energy, you're right, it is three spaces. It pushes at one space and then it suffers a damage. So very flexible.
Yep. And he proceeded to use one, I don't remember exactly which combination of these, but one combination to get that extra attack with his Vader on my Vader, which put him sort of ahead in the tempo, and that all shook out to him winning the game.
Damn, that's so awesome.
Yeah, so it was like, well, it was clear what my mistake was. That's been fixed. The deck is now utilizing that trick.
Yeah. It's very cool to see like the progression and evolution of a list and how it kind of splits, but you're like still, you know, you see this version like that James is running, and then to just see like what its advantages are. Obviously it doesn't have the card draw, but it does have this other advantage, and it's really interesting for like you, who's obviously an incredibly good player, to be like, nope, that is the next step in which we need to go.
That is. Rule by Fear is a great card. Rule by Fear gets you consistency on the draw. Like, even if you're drawing two garbage cards and pitching one of them, that's two garbage cards that you wouldn't have to draw at the end of round one. Right?
Exactly.
So even if it doesn't work, like, first order in getting you a hand of fire, it works in second order of getting you closer to all those fire cards.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think And I'm a huge fan of consistency, especially in tournament play, which is a lot of times why I don't play white die figures much. But that's a different story.
Because you'd rather be good than lucky, unlike me.
So it was a, and it's a, Unshakables and is a strict improvement. Shore up a weakness that the list has, let you do these very cool tactical things, let you get an additional of one of the best attacks in the game, if not the best attack in the game. So that's what I should have done, that's what I didn't do, that's what James did, and then he beat me. And he goes on to get second to Brett, who at that point is playing Han Rangers. And I think you heard about that last week?
Yeah, we did talk about that. Yep. That was two episodes ago. So very, very good. Very incredibly competitive field right there.
Yeah. At a guess, I actually think the first regional we went to, or I went to, may have been the most competitive. Right? You have, of the people who placed top four at Worlds, we had three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
DT couldn't make the trip, which understandable, given that it's on the other side of the U.S.
Yeah.
And and he's doing fine in his own regionals, so he didn't need to come wreck ours.
That's right.
No, but it's been a fun season, and it's been the season that I've seen sort of, one, the widest field of play, and two, more evolution without a rule change. Like, halfway through the last season, we got the Jabba's Palace box and then the scoring change, which, you know, it entirely disrupted the meta. This has been roughly the same meta. Like, all the same figures have been available from start to finish. And we've seen a lot of evolution in what we consider good, or certainly at least what we consider, like, tournament viable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, when the riots dropped, I heard no chatter about them, right? Other than they're melee, and melee figures aren't good, right? You know, whereas Jets have just been such a good staple, it seemed like riots weren't very good. And, you know, riots aren't as good as Jets, but they still have got this very strong position that they can fill in a list.
Yep.
Which has been demonstrated by you, most especially.
If the Empire has one glaring weakness right now, it is the range game.
Yeah. Right?
Effectively, if we look at my list, and not my list is a bad way, a lot of people came up to this same conclusions at about the same time. But if we look at the list that I've been playing, it is effectively all melee.
Yep.
The Jets are a melee unit with reach.
Yeah, exactly.
So things that pose a problem for it, and if you want to start to chip away at the Vader list, Rangers.
Mm.
Rangers are a big problem. Things that can shots that remove Jets in one shot. Focused Han. This is a great example. Some of the focused three die attacks that mercenaries have access to. Focused Onar can easily remove a Jet from the field.
Absolutely.
And then he's already bought back 2/3 of his points. So you need range, and you need things that can remove a Jet Trooper in one shot. The core of the list is Jet Troopers, right? Yep. If you have removed my Jet Troopers and a riot or both riots, and all I have is Vader and an officer sitting around, you've probably won the game. My goal in playing it is to put you in a position where you have to deal with Vader, and you have to expend more material and more tempo and more, like, spacing to get rid of him than he's worth. He doesn't actually often kill his 13 points.
Yeah.
But
that's a good point.
He really enables the rest of the list to go do stuff.
That's a great point, because it draws attention away from the Jets, which is the biggest thing.
Yep.
Exactly. So this is something I wanted to ask you. How do you feel like the weak matchup for your list in terms of, like, where you're a little bit more worried is playing against something like Han Rangers? Is that you'd see that across the list or across the table and think, okay, we're in for a scrap? Is that what you feel is, like, one of the, do you feel like there's a stronger list than that against the Vader Jets one riot list?
If we're talking purely lists in a vacuum.
Yes.
This is going to be a cop-out answer. What I am most worried about seeing is a mirror match.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that may just come down to coin flips.
Exactly. That's right? I totally get that.
And
you and James is a good example. I mean, well, I guess his list when he was running Unshakable, but like the you've played against each other, you know it's going down, right? So it's like, who's going to draw the better cards?
Yeah, or who's going to make, like, better micro decisions? Yeah. And that's something you can't necessarily predict or plan for.
Absolutely.
Outside of the mirror match, I think Han Rangers is very strong against it. I think lists that have a lot of options for stun, right? You'll look at stunning Vader, and maybe you can and maybe you can't, but if you stun a couple of jet troopers, they're basically useless for a round because they need to both move and shoot, and they are easier to stun than Vader, right? So one of the things that I really liked about Nick's list was the stun on Chewie is basically is automatic, right?
Yeah.
I'm not certain, like, Nick's going to grump at me for saying this. I'm not certain that Chewie is the best use of 11 points there. Man, it's a problem to deal with my list.
Again, and that's assuming he doesn't just, like, one-shot the jet, right? Like, yeah, he's going to stun it if he doesn't just one-shot it.
And he has some unmitigated damage, which is a huge thing. It's random unmitigated damage, which isn't, like, optimal, but it is still... Well, there's 3 damage I can't do anything about.
Absolutely.
So that's another option. Scum-wise, Scum doesn't have as many good matchups, or as many, like, obviously good matchups. I still think, just generic efficient Scum run well can be a huge pain to deal with. Weak ways are so consistent. You have an interesting option in IG-88, and then you have some stuff that just sort of comes off the wall with Scum, right? Like, if we look at, I think DT's world list had, and maybe Brett's did as well last year, had Shyla in it.
Yep.
Right? I looked at her card, I don't know, a half dozen times, and I was like, this looks like Scum Obi-Wan. Good, not great, I don't know how I'm going to play it. I ran up against a Bossk in the last regional, and with 0 card support, he put 8 damage on Vader.
Oh man!
And I didn't roll particularly terrible. Like, I think he was focused. He gets the +2 from being Bossk, and then all of a sudden, half of Vader is gone, and like he hasn't played Assassinate, he hasn't played Heightened Reflexes, and that was like, you know, that's pause for concern, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
I don't know if they have as many, this is the obvious counter as the Rebels do.
Yeah.
But their toolbox is really fairly diverse.
So you don't look across the table, CIG, and think, oh boy, that's a problem. It's more of, okay, that's an interesting question. We'll see how it gets solved.
Yeah. And this is a little counterproductive, but... So you look down and you see the list. Significantly more importantly than that is you look up about 6 inches and you see the player.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
And so if I'm playing someone like Paul or like Brett or like James or Ira or Ryan or a host of other like very good players, you know, I could look down and see like Dengar and Saska there. and my thought isn't going to be like, oh, I got this in the bag. My thought is going to be, well, shit, what did I miss?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Because, what have they concocted here?
Yeah. So it's not the list, it's the player.
Like, I think Brett's a great example. He brings Han and Jedi Knight Luke, right? And you're like, what the heck is that? 22 points for 2 figures, you know? Like, that's a lot of attacks you're getting, but I don't know. Like, I would have been really skeptical of that, like, seeing it, but obviously it's Brett.
And, he had a lot of fun tricks with change of plans on that first regional to get more out of Han or Luke, whoever was doing what needed to be done at the time.
Yeah.
In general, I think his audible to the Elite Rangers is going to produce a more consistent tournament list. And you're kind of trading the single best command card in the game, in Son of Skywalker, for a host of very good ones in the Ranger cards.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Brett's list is actually kind of interesting, right? So I played double Rangers at Nationals and got to top 8. Julian beat me in a barn burner where I made the last mistake.
Julian is the Canadian Nationals champion.
He lost to Brett in the finals of the U.S. Nationals. Excellent player. Great guy. I actually really enjoyed my game against him. I'm hoping to get to see him at Worlds, and I have mixed feelings about a rematch. On one hand, I want one. On the other hand, I don't want one where it matters.
Yeah, exactly.
And after we got the Han wave, I sort of, like, I looked at Han. I played a little bit of the Han Rangers. Not the exact build that Brett has, but something adjacent. And I came to the conclusion that I just like double Rangers better. It was less fragile. It generated more attacks. It could spread out more. But the Han Rangers variant generates better attacks and gives you access to the very powerful smuggler cards in meaningful ways. Like, it doesn't matter too much if you on the Lam Hera out of the way. It matters a heck of a lot more if you shuffle Han out of the way. So I don't know. I don't play enough Rebels, or I haven't played enough Rebels since Nationals, to have a strong opinion on sort of the optimal list there. But copying whatever Brett's doing is a safe bet, unless yep. you have to pilot it as well as he does.
Yeah, exactly. Copying it is good for having a awesome kernel, but...
Yeah, exactly that, right? And I think one of the things that... I think one of the things that people should pay attention to when they're doing list building is at what level can I pilot this for a day?
Yeah.
Right? I might be able to play... I might be able to play Han Rangers approximately as well. Probably not as well. I can play a reasonable facsimile of it for a game, right?
Yeah.
Because
you understand the fundamentals, right? Like, you're a strong player.
And I can really spend the time and the energy and the effort for one game focusing. But like round 7, round 8.
It's such a great point.
No, the wheels will have fallen off. Which is one of the reasons I actually really like the Imperials. You'll hear me joke about it. What you do is you push dudes forward and roll dice.
That's it.
But
that's
strategically, it. You push dudes forward and roll dice.
That's it.
Tactically, there's some more interesting things, but you're counting on your defensive shenanigans and your hit point efficiency to deliver your dudes where you can roll the dice.
Absolutely.
And that's not something that takes a great amount of finesse. Like, you can do that roughly as well in round 7 and 8 as you can in round 1.
Great point. Well, so, Lucas, I feel like it has just been kind of a fire hydrant of tournament discussion in terms of list building and everything. And I don't want you to have to feel like you're really, you know, giving it all to us. But Worlds is coming up in a month. So what are you doing to prepare for Worlds in terms of, like, what are you, like, in... Is there any other list changes you're thinking about making? I mean, if we're going to see a lot of Han Rangers, like, is there anything you're thinking about doing in terms of preparation? Like, what does the next month have for you and James and your play group as you're like getting ready for Worlds?
So I'll give you a solid answer and I'll give you a cop-out answer.
Perfect.
The solid answers are going to be for Imperials. I'm probably not going to touch them much.
Okay.
Until maybe right before Worlds. I understand what's going on there. I've arrived at something that I think is going to be very competitive. That's the two officers, two elite jets, Vader, the elite riots, Zillow, Unshakable. It's going to be using the great trooper cards, Grenadier, Overrun. It's going to be using the things that let Vader manipulate the field a little bit more. Parting Blow, Dark Energy, Looking for a Fight. That's going to be sort of the core of the command deck, and then you fill into taste.
Yep.
What I'm going to explore is the other factions, which I haven't gotten as much tournament time with.
Okay.
Right. I'm going to take a look at Scum. I'm a huge fan of the Elite Gamorrean Guards. Ran two of them last year at Worlds. I think they are fantastic on back alleys. I think they are consistently strong on Jabba's Palace. More on that in a second. I have gotten much better as a player playing short-range units on Nal Hutta since it came out. Yeah. So I think there's some variant of that, because that has a lot of the buttons that I like in Imperial, right? There's a defensive shenanigan that's very hit-point efficient. It has a consistent attack that you can reroll. It's a source of unmitigated damage in the cleave. Like, there's a lot of things I like about that. I'm probably going to... And also, I really like playing the pigs.
Yeah, I totally get that.
And then I'm going to take a look at some of the Rangers builds. I'm going to look at my Nationals list again, which was two Rangers, Care Package, Hera, some other miscellaneous support. And I'm going to take another look at Han. I played him a little bit, but having seen him played a lot more, I feel I could take a better crack at him.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to touch Imperials too much. I know what's going on there. I feel like I know what's going on there. I may be wrong.
No, I mean, like, I would say the only question in Imperials that I still don't think is solved is sentries.
They're good.
Sentries.
They're
you know,
good.
Yeah, exactly. They're super good. You know, like, it hasn't seemed like the meta has really gravitated towards them, but I think that's one where it's like, maybe, right? Like, I could see a little bit more breakout there.
They also have, so right, if you can get their two attacks off in a round, multi-fire, right? That's yep. what that's called. If you can do that consistently, they're one of the most efficient damage dealers in the game. If yep. you are using charge shot, it's not looking so good.
I mean, they can hit from far away, but it's not. It's just not going to make as big of an impact.
Yeah, it's not going to make as big of an impact. And this becomes like what we just talked about in that piloting paradigm. It's going to take consistently excellent positioning to yeah. get charged or to get multi-fire off on three out of your four or both of your E-Centuries every round. And that's where they're really going to make back their points.
Absolutely. Great point. Such a great point.
So I they're competitive. They're good. They are super efficient if you can be shooting, if you can be using multi-fire. I don't think I'm going to try and get proficient with them between now and Worlds.
Yeah, a month is, that's a lot to ask.
There are a couple of other units that I want to take a sidelong look at. Right, out of the Heart of the Empire box, I was madly in love with Drakata.
Yeah.
Right, I think, like, I keep bringing up unmitigated damage, and Drakata is a hugely interesting source of it in a bunch of ways. Right, from the demolish token that you throw down to shrapnel to blast two, right? Yep. There are tricks in that bag. The downside is 1 point less than Han.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. Although, I mean, realistically, I don't think there is a figure in the game who can do more damage than Drakata. I mean, he can just shred. You know, if he can get his shots off, and obviously your opponent has really got to work hard on this, but that's kind of part of the thing, is that if your opponent isn't very careful, Drakata can just put out so much damage, and that your opponent needs to avoid that is something that, like, good Drakata players will start to work around, right? Like, they know, like, he can't do this, because if he does, I'm just going to shred him, so I'm going to take advantage of that, right?
Yep. That was my more substantive answer. My cop-out answer is it all depends on if we're going to get a map rotation and what we're going to get.
Yeah.
The maps dictate a huge part of the meta.
Absolutely.
My best example of this is the Bantha. The Bantha is an amazing figure. Absolutely incredible. In a lot of ways, Nalhutta killed it.
Yeah. Yep. That's such a good point.
As soon as Nalhutta rotates out, or if, like, we can pull DT level magic and play the Bantha on Nalhutta, like, you're going to see a resurgence of this this really good card.
I totally, totally agree with that.
And if we get a map that's super conducive to it, well, it might be Bantha and Two Pigs is what's showing up at Worlds.
that would be awesome.
Yeah. So the cop-out is it depends on, like, if we're a month out, 3 weeks out, we haven't got a map rotation. Then I'm probably going to stick to something that what you've seen in the regional season.
Do you have any speculation as to what you think the next map would be?
I have a little bit of doomsaying, right? I really don't like any of the three coming up. Assuming they pick some from the Ahsoka, Maul, Palpatine box. And I should clarify that. I don't really like them for tournament play.
Yeah.
I think there are some that are there are some fun of the scenarios in there that are fun.
Yeah.
Even for, like, untimed matches. An example of something that I think is really good untimed is the courier droid mission.
Yep.
Right? If you're playing four or five rounds, like, that's a really fun mission. If you're playing three rounds, you might score one. Like, mathematically, it is possible for both players to score one and only one. The droids aren't a figure, so you can't do any neat shenanigans about pushing them, kind of like you could with the senators on the Palpatine map. The long and the short of it, as I think, is the most tournamentally viable one is the Palpatine map.
Okay.
I think the accuracy debuff is a very interesting tilt to what is otherwise just a beat-em-up scenario.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of interesting that right now, in rotation, we have three scenarios where you go sit on a box and three scenarios where you pick up a box.
Yep.
And traditionally, we've also always had one beat-em-up scenario where all you do is go punch the other guy. This goes back to, like, in the first Worlds, the IG-88 mission that didn't involve the giant laser. The giant laser one was a super fun. But there was I think it was Bounty Hunters, which was just a straight beat-em-up mission. There was one of them on the Stormtrooper Training Grounds. Deception Game was pretty much a straight beat-em-up mission. So we've traditionally had, like, one pure, let's go meet in the middle and roll some dice. And so that may be something that they're going to bring back in a very dead mission, like Palpatine B. What have you seen on the Slack? What's like, what are the people talking about in your neck of the woods?
So here's how the Slack channel goes in terms of discussing future maps. We all gather around the proverbial fire as Brett tells us what he thinks. I mean, because he called Mos Eisley. And yep. So we just kind of gather around the fire and listen to what he says. And he's of the same mind of you, I think, generally, in terms of it's unclear what they would pick. I would recommend, and I'm actually going to link to his discussion when they were getting ready to swap in Mos Eisley. We didn't know it at the time. He called it, and he gives a really great breakdown of the other likely maps. But, you know, it's a coin flip. No one really knows. I don't think we're getting a map rotation before Worlds. I mean, they've done it before. I think the very first Worlds, they dropped the map rotation like a week or two before Worlds. But besides that, it's been...
And the most recent one, right? Didn't we get Jabba's Palace like less than a month before Worlds?
I think it was in July. I'm not totally positive on that, but maybe. Yeah, that might be right. I mean, and we are still a month out, so yep. I guess I could see it, but...
Yeah.
And I really want my Thrawn announcement is what I really want, but...
May 4th, that weekend. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm betting we'll see the next... The next wave, and we'll see what's going to happen with the future of the game. I'm excited for it.
I think I'm completely with you. I want FFG to get off their rears and give us news. But for all the complaining I do, the game is in such a great spot in terms of the meta, in terms of like the arc of the game. I don't play the campaign very much, but in terms of just like the general arc that we've been going on with Skirmish, it's just been awesome.
Yep. Skirmish is in the best place it's ever been.
Very, very much. Well, we want to thank Lucas for coming on and just absolutely blowing our brains. I don't know if anyone else started taking pen and paper notes, but this is an episode that is going to repay future listening. So thank you so much, Lucas, for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a blast.
Perfect. We want to encourage everyone to join us on the Slack channel. Send an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com and support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/zionsfinest. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good day.